Today on Straight Talk Africa, the UN says many highly educated and skilled Africans leave the continent annually. Is it brain drain or brain gain? We examine the causes that push and pull with young African leaders right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa. It's Wednesday, September 17th. I am Shaka Salih.
Well, hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, we'll introduce you to another group of extraordinary Mandera Washington Fellows who are due to return home as their fellowship stint comes to an end.
Well, I can't wait to hear about their experience here and the impact living in the United States have had in the past few months. Coming up later in our STA inbox, our audience have sent in their questions and comments to our young fellows. We'll reveal some of them ahead on Straight Talk Africa.
But first, the Washington Mandela Fellowship brought 500 of Africa's best and brightest to the United States to study, learn new skills, network, and return home with new experiences. My colleague, Paul Sisco, has more.
My name is Lola Akomatri. I'm from Togo. I'm a Yali Fellow.
My name is Cyrus Kawalia. I'm a Mandela Washington Fellow, 2014. I'm from Uganda, and I'm currently interning at Voice of America.
You're listening to The Yali Show. We'll be back in a minute.
That was strong.
Lola did her academic study at Northwestern University near Chicago.
So what do you think about the topic brain drain?
I think it's a part of a global trend that's unstoppable and which we just need to figure out how to manage better.
She spoke with author and Northwestern professor of media studies Douglas Foster by phone.
Globalization has meant that somebody, whether she's in Mumbai or Johannesburg or Los Angeles, has opportunities around the world that may be magnets that draw them elsewhere.
Lola is a veteran journalist and a board member of the National Journalists Trade Union in Togo. She also works with young journalists and women to promote a free media environment in Togo.
We signed a document saying that we have to stay in our country for 2 years before coming back to U.S.
Really?
Yeah, yes. For them, it's another strategy to avoid the brain drain.
Cyrus furthered his civic leadership goals at the University of California, Berkeley. A passionate photographer and filmmaker, he works with underprivileged youth in Uganda to give them a voice. He also founded a nonprofit called Vision Eye, an eye for change that helps young entrepreneurs further their dreams and business concerns.
Brain drain and brain gain. Some of the people in the diaspora have been the hugest contributors to our economies back at home. For example, by 2002, Africa was receiving $40 billion from immigrants. And some of these really skilled and highly educated people contribute a lot to the crucial family lifeline at home in Africa. There's problems with policy, there's problems with infrastructure. Those are some of the problems that push Africans to leave.
He returns to Uganda soon, determined to expand the Yali radio network across Uganda and around the continent.
What I want to do is I want to create a huger and broader network for the Yali radio on the continent so that we can have ideas and discussions coming from different parts of the continent and everybody has access to listen to it, and then people are able to come up with solutions, because, you know, we need a lot of independent thinking for creativity to thrive. And I think it's one of the key components in creating solutions to some of the problems that we face on the continent.
The Mandela Washington Fellows are helping to reverse the trend and turn brain drain into brain gain. President Barack Obama says the United States intends to double the number of annual Mandela participants to 1,000 by 2016. Paul Sisco, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul, for that interesting report. Now, joining us here in our Washington studios are three distinguished
2014 Mandela Washington Fellows. Irene Chikumbo is the co-founder and current community manager of Hypercube Technology Hub, where she is responsible for developing capacity to help ignite a digital startup culture in Zimbabwe. Cyrus Kawalia is the founder and team leader of Vision Eye, an organization that offers workshops to young people who are interested in pursuing a career in cinema and photography. And last but not least, Laura Akomatsi is a journalist from Togo. She is the former editor-in-chief of Focus Infos, a weekly newspaper based in Togo, and served as a local correspondent of the French desk of the South African Broadcasting Corporation, SABC. Well, I have to say, first of all, that Eileen, Cyrus, and Laura, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah,
thank
I'm
very
you.
Honored.
The pleasure is for us. Yeah.
You're most welcome. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with the guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. Let me come immediately to you, Irene.
Sure.
First of all, how does it feel like to be on Straight Talk Africa?
I can't even find the words to explain it. I'm very excited, honored to meet you. I've watched some of your shows, and I think it's important with the work you do, how you highlight a lot of the issues that we really need to talk about as African people. So it's an honor to be a part of this.
Well, I have to say that the feeling is mutual, of course. Unfortunately, we did not get in touch with you a little bit earlier so that you could also tell us about, in fact, what makes you tick. You've listened to your two colleagues.
Yes.
Introducing themselves.
Yes.
What about you?
What makes me tick? Lots. I'm really passionate about technology and sustainable development. I think Africa has a lot to offer the world. And after I graduated from my master's, I decided I needed to go home and, I guess, put all my passions into play. Mm-hmm. I knew it was not going to be an easy journey, but the end goal is going to be worth it. So technology, sustainable development, also interested in helping young girls realize their dreams as well, and that anything is possible. I think we've grown around many constraints in our life, especially as the girl child, mm-hmm. but there's a world of opportunities out there, and you just need someone to help you realize those dreams.
Where did you do your graduate work?
I did it in Sweden at the Blekinge Institute of Technology, which mm-hmm. in the southeast side of Sweden.
And you're looking forward to going back to Harare, the Zimbabwean capital?
Yes, I'm very excited to put everything we've learned into action. That's what I'm waiting for.
In a word, how would you characterize the fellowship that you've been part of, and of course, the internship?
This may sound very cliche, but it has been life-changing. I think in terms of the first thing that's really hit me is the types of people I've met, the other fellows. I think it's an opportunity that not many of us have to interact with people from all over the continent of Africa, because mm-hmm. when we usually go out for school, we interact with, if I go to the US to study, it's usually interacting with the Americans. But with the fellowship, I got a chance to meet people like Lola and Cyrus and all these people from Mauritius and Kenya, people I probably would not have had the opportunity to engage with at this level.
Really?
So that has been one of the most, I think, valuable experience and the relationships that I can build from there on. And also in terms of the knowledge that I've acquired, in terms of the people I've met and the knowledge exchange that has happened, some of the, I guess, best practices for certain industries like the tech industry, what works well, what doesn't. I'm working with the USADF, which is a federal development agency, seeing what are the best practices. So there's been a wealth of learning, Shaka.
Really?
Yeah.
What about you, Cyrus? What can you tell us about your experiences so far? Very, very briefly, what have you learned, and what are you taking back home with you?
Being a part of this high-powered initiative, I've learned quite a great deal, especially like Irene has said, in terms of relating a lot to the rest of the African continent and understanding people's different issues, and realize that we share some of the same issues and we can come up with almost the same solutions. But more importantly, I feel it's something that has created a unity amongst us as African people. First of all, we're young, we've become exposed to the world, and then we have an opportunity that we can always contact somebody elsewhere in a different part of the continent. And I think that's one of the most hugest thing I'll take back at home, apart from the experience of being at the University of California and studying public policy and leadership that I was not a student of. It has opened up new doors and a new dimension for me, and I hope to go back home and be able to do much more in my career.
Very interesting. I should point out to you, by the way, that I happen to be a graduate of the University of California, not Berkeley, but Los Angeles. Now tell us, you talk about how this program has given you the opportunity, for example, to unite. What precisely do you mean by that? Would you, for example, be an advocate for removing these boundaries, which some people, in fact, characterize as being very artificial?
The possibilities into that are there. And I think it's part of us as the young leaders to go back home and try to start that process of constantly engaging together and seeing the way we can move forward together. We're young people, we have new different aspects to the world and the way we see things. Coming here has given me a global perspective on things. So I look at the United States, I look at European Union, and I'm like, why don't we look at an Africa that is united? Why don't we make this possible? But that's a challenge to us young people to start to push forward, and hopefully that there are policies and infrastructures that can support us in that way.
What about you, Laura? Laura, all the way from Togo.
Yes.
From Lomé?
From Lomé, yes.
The capital.
Thank you. So it's a great opportunity for me to be part of the Mandela Washington Fellowship, because my institute was in Northwestern. I was with Irene during my track, my institute, and I have the opportunity to learn new skills in terms of business and entrepreneurship. You know, I have a background in journalism, so every day I have to deal with the microphone, I have to deal with people, but I don't really think about how to, you know, to manage the media house, the media organization in terms of business, in terms of entrepreneurship side aspects. So it was really, you know, I gained some insight in terms of drawing or designing strategies, you know, to manage. And because we are in an area of new technologies, so I'm working, or I was working for a newspaper. So how to, I mean, to cope and mix, you know, the newspaper and the digital media, you know, is very important. And we are in a context of debt. You know, the media sector, especially for the newspaper, is shrinking. So we have to think beyond. We have to create new strategies to sustain our business. So I gain a lot of insight and experience from professors. You know, we had some cases from MIT, Harvard, and it was very nice. I also have the opportunity to meet Professor Foster, who I have the opportunity to interview here as part of this show. So we are still working on a project, because back home I want to create a platform that will engage the minority groups, and I want to train them as citizen journalists, you know, just to let them to report from their own perspective. So we are still working on that project, and I'm very grateful to be here as part of the Mandela Washington Fellowship.
Terrific. Before we pause for a short break, would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is on the social networking website Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa, become a fan, and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please, don't go away.
Since 1990, Africa has lost over 20,000 professionals a year. Over 300,000 of them reside outside the continent. Here are just a few of the nation's hardest hit by brain drain. Ethiopia lost 75% of its skilled workforce between 1980 and 1991. The exodus has left the nation with too few seasoned physicians, engineers, and scientists. Over 2 million Nigerians live in the U.S. 20,000 of them are doctors and over 10,000 are academics. In Kenya, as of 2002, the public sector medical field has only 600 doctors and 70 dentists available to treat over 28 million citizens. Between 500,000 and 1.8 million Kenyans now work overseas. And over the past 3 years, South Africa has lost over 100,000 workers to jobs abroad. An additional 70% of skilled South Africans say they are considering leaving their homeland.
President Obama recently delivered a statement to West Africans in support of the international fight against Ebola.
On behalf of the American people, I want you to know that our prayers are with those of you who have lost loved ones during this terrible outbreak of Ebola. Along with our partners around the world, the United States is working with your government to help stop this disease. If you feel sick with a high fever, you should get help right away. Because with prompt treatment in a medical center, nearly half of patients can recover. Stopping this disease won't be easy, but we know how to do it. You are not alone. Together, we can treat those who are sick with respect and dignity. We can save lives. And our countries can work together to improve public health so this kind of outbreak doesn't happen again. In this urgent work, and in building a stronger and more prosperous Africa, you'll continue to have a partner in me and in the United States of America.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111, U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question, keep your comment brief, and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui. Let me come back to you, Lola. You heard earlier your colleague Cyrus talk about how this fellowship has, in some ways, given him an opportunity to begin thinking, really, about African unity, about you sons and daughters of Africa, frankly, coming from one organic place called Africa. Mm-hmm. Is that the same feeling you got, especially in your particular case, given that your founding president, Sylvanus Olympio, who was killed back in 1963, was actually among those in the vanguard of African unity?
Yes, thank you for this question. You know, as part of this fellowship, we have to learn how to collaborate, how to partner with the other fellows from each of the country, because we have the opportunity to have different backgrounds. So we have to leverage on that difference to work together. And this is the, for me, is the future of our continent. Because if you just think that you can change everything alone or without the others, is a lie. So you have to count with each of the fellow to work together. So mm-hmm. I know that there is some project that I'm working on, and for sure I will need the collaboration of each of the fellows coming from the country, because for me, I speak French, but it's not a barrier for me, or it will keep me from collaborating with the other fellows. So I'm still thinking, and there is a lot of project going on, and yeah, I'm very excited, and I know that all of the fellows are willing to collaborate with me, and this is how we can push forward or move forward in the continent.
Very interesting. What about you, Irene? You obviously come from a country that benefited enormously from the rest of Africa to be liberated, and in turn you also helped to liberate some of the countries in your general neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
So how does this experience feel for you?
As in the experience of coming to the fellowship?
Being part of the other Africans coming from the different parts of the continent.
Oh, I think like what Lola said, I think that aspect of us being unified, I must say though that one thing I was, I wouldn't say it was a concern, but the fact that we all had to come to America to come together when we all live within the same landmass was mm-hmm. a bit disappointing for me. But nonetheless, I'm happy that we all had the opportunity to come and meet and exchange ideas and that transfer of information within the continent itself. Because, you know, when we look at globalization, I think a lot of us just think of developing to the West, but mm-hmm. there's a lot of globalization that's happening within Africa as a continent as well. So, I mean, there's been a lot of learnings in that regard.
So when you hear about, for example, brain drain, really, I mean, you're talking about a continent, frankly, which is enormously endowed with anything you can think of.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that a lot of Africa's best and brightest tend to go for what some characterize as greener pastures elsewhere?
Yeah, the brain drain has been a discussion I think I've discussed with a lot of my fellow youth. Having young people go off to other countries, I think mainly I've experienced it myself as a youth, because there's push and pull factors. Mm-hmm. The push factors from home are the ones that maybe we're not getting a good enough salary, or there aren't enough opportunities, as we would say it, or the living conditions, lack of access to water or electricity are what mm-hmm. are pushing us away. And we are trying to move to these greener pastures, as you mentioned, where we do have opportunities for jobs. So the reason why a lot of us end up leaving is because I know that with the money and time we invested in going to college, we can now go get an output, I guess, get like a good job, you know, a good salary, a good standard of living. Mm-hmm. So those are the factors that are pulling us forward. So the brain drain is a real issue. And I think we've all experienced it as young African people. But I think as the future of tomorrow, we really need to take on that responsibility to go and help people back at home. Development lies in our hands, and the brain drain doesn't have to have the negative impacts that it's having right now.
So do you agree with some people, in fact, who can say you can flip it upside down and in fact call it brain gain for Africa?
Oh yeah, definitely. I think one important thing I think we all need to realize is that the African diaspora is an asset. Whether they're in America, China, Australia, or actually in their land of origin. So there is a lot of gain that these countries can have through information transfer. I mean, technology has really given us a platform to share information. So why are we not using that? Even though I do also try and encourage the rest of the youth out there to come back home, because no one is going to build the home that we want to see if we don't come back home.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there are ways of mitigating the people who are out there and making that brain drain a brain gain.
Terrific. We have to go for the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. I gather that we have Vuva from Nigeria. Good evening, Vuva. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Taka is Vuva Umariaza. You are a regular caller sometimes.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Now, my own question is, we Africans, are we not experiencing an educational slavery? Because we graduate students from here for other world to enjoy. Now, what do you think slavery now have translated from original slavery to educational slavery? Now, this is, do you think, doesn't have a relationship with economic economic hardship that we experience here in Africa?
Thank you.
Now, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, my brother, because there are a lot of people in the queue. Thank you so much. Let me come to you, Cyrus. I think you pretty much got the gist of his question, really. And he has a point coming from Nigeria, because I have heard actually people complain that when you look at the Nigerian healthcare system, the infrastructure, it leaves a lot to be desired, so much that it has reached a situation where it can be very embarrassing, where the rich Nigerians, for example, get sick, go to the United Kingdom, only to find that they are being attended to by Nigerian doctors.
That's a very interesting element to realize, and I think I had a discussion with somebody before, and the issue was actually about healthcare in Africa. It is one, I think, of the most deprived, because most of the people that work in healthcare have moved elsewhere. And it's a little bit sad, but when you also think about it, I want to flip the script to the gain side, because think about it this way. There are about 30 million people in the diaspora, and these people contribute about 40 billion to mm-hmm. Africa. Mm-hmm. And Nigeria actually has 1.3 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a lifeline for very many families back at home. So when you think about it, it's when people go out of the country, they get new skills, they get exposed, they get new perspectives, then they go back home. The question is now, our governments back at home have to set up infrastructure that can pull that labor back home. But I don't think we should sit and complain much about people leaving. People mm-hmm. need to leave because mm-hmm. they need to create opportunity for themselves, they need to provide for their families, they need to take care of the old people. But the question is, how do we move forward from there? How do we set up economic policies that can take back people in terms of investment and trade? So I think African governments can focus much on that and find a way of pulling these people back home. I'm going to give you a very good example. In 2003 to 2008, India had the biggest remittances back home from people in the diaspora. And it was actually, I think, at 52 billion.
Mm-hmm.
But what they have done in India, they've gone ahead to create space for these people to come back home to the extent that they have actually set up what you call the Ministry of Overseas Indian Foreign Affairs,
right,
that coordinates these people to be able to go back and invest in their countries.
Right.
And I think African governments can learn a lot from that in the case of also Nigeria.
And India, in fact, not only that, it also allows the Indian nationals the privileges, the rights of being an Indian, mm-hmm. rather than some countries, including yours, which talks about dual nationality, but in practice, what it does, it makes Ugandans in the diaspora, frankly, become a sort of second-class citizen,
mm, exactly.
because you cannot compete for anything valuable, as if you are not a Ugandan. Let's go to Lola. What about you?
Yeah.
How do we move from here? Really, because I know that your country also suffers from the same disease.
Exactly.
I have met a lot of Togolese in Paris, mm-hmm. a lot of them, some of them in South Africa and what have you.
Yeah, I think it's the same situation, because we don't always have to blame the people or our brains who leave the continent or our country, because when they are willing to come back, what do we offer to them? When they are willing to come back, our government have to set up some incentive measures just to attract them to come back to the country. Because take the example of that person who, after working or getting his degree, you know, after to get your PhD is not that easy, after 8 years, and then you are willing to come back to your country, you have, you know, high expectations. But when you come back and you look at the environment, it's not supportive at all.
I hear
and
you.
Even to create your business, you have to pay taxes. There is no amnesty in terms of taxes payments. There is to create, look, in Togo, they are making some efforts to create your business in one day. It helps. They also set up at the office of the Prime Minister. There is a steering committee that will coordinate, as Saris just said, to coordinate with the diaspora living abroad, how they can come back and how to identify the opportunity in the country and where to invest the money that they have.
I'm afraid time happens not to be our best ally. We'll come to that later. You're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of our discussion in a moment. But first, here is Mariama Jaro. Take it away, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the outstanding feedback we've received from our audience through social media. But now, here is our letter of the week.
Bright Akpede from Nigeria writes, there are lots of opportunities for African students and professionals to come back home and add value to our continent. Our governments need to target them and create an environment conducive for them to succeed. This entails providing good working conditions, affordable taxes, good infrastructure, respect of human rights, and an open market. Without it, our brothers and sisters abroad will not be motivated to return and be part of the African success story.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA. This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number 202-619-3111. And the U.S. country code is 1. Call us collects and we'll pay for the call. Or call directs and we'll call you right back. Remember to keep your questions brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama. Take it away again, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Many African countries have instituted bilateral agreements with developed nations that require university students to return home immediately after graduating for a set period of time before they can emigrate again abroad. This is only one of the ways that some African nations are trying to combat the continent's brain drain, which leads us to our question of the week, asking, what can African governments do to ensure that students and professionals who study and live abroad return home to utilize their skills and expertise? Well, let's begin right away with a comment from Mohamedina Jakana from Liberia, who writes, while it's true that Africans who live and study abroad want to return home to a good environment, it's also their responsibility to serve their country. That's especially important now as Africa deals with Ebola and other challenges. Africans in the diaspora communities must be concerned about what they can do for the continent, not just what the African governments can provide in return. Well, there's certainly a famous quote from U.S. President John F. Kennedy that alludes to that very topic. He told Americans, I remember, actually I wasn't born, but I've read it in books, ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country. Well, it's certainly something to keep in mind. Here is another post from Ezra Mwampote in Tanzania, who says, there should be an agreement or law that mandates that students who want to study abroad must return to Africa and contribute to the growth and development of their countries. If they can't commit to this, then they should not be given the opportunity to study overseas. Well, a good point, but again, each immigrant story is different. I know plenty of people who went back. Others, for many reasons, choose to stay. Those reasons can be paying off student loans before going back. Higher education, we know that, is very expensive in the United States. Others have worked really, really hard to get to where they are today and are just not ready to give it all up and leave. But that doesn't mean they don't love their country of origin. It's a complicated and complex issue. Shaka and the fellows, I definitely want to hear from you guys.
Lola?
Yeah, you know, I'm really glad that some of the people mentioned that, you know, those people who decide to get established abroad, they have already their life abroad. So we cannot just like that to ask them to come back. But what we can do is to collaborate, to establish partnership with them. They can somehow, let's take the example of the healthcare workers. We have some talented doctors who live abroad. And when you take the figures regarding Togo, my country, for example, there is more doctors that are living in France more than what we have in the country.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have to call them and say, okay, come back. This
but
is
are you
your
surprised?
Duty.
I mean, you have had dictatorship since 1963.
It's not just about the dictatorship or some whatever, but it's about the economic opportunity that we offer to them. We can somehow ask them to come back when they are having their vacation or summer, just to come back and train the next generation, you know, just to pass on the experience on them.
Mm.
Because we have, when you go to the system, and sometimes when you ask for an appointment, they may say, okay, this doctor who can do that surgery or that particular surgery is living abroad, so you have to wait for him. But if we establish partnership and then he come back just for maybe months to come back and train the local doctors that we have, next time that a patient will come back to the hospital, they may be able to handle that situation.
Mm.
And also train the next generation.
I see.
Yeah.
I see. Well, Mariama, please share some more feedback from our audience.
Well, that's certainly a great point. And when I hear that there are 20,000 doctors in the United States, 20,000 Nigerian doctors in the United States, I'm thinking, wow, if we could just have like maybe 10,000 of them in Senegal, everybody will feel absolutely healthy, not just in Senegal, maybe neighboring countries. Well, let's move on to a comment from Darius Shabala from Zambia, who writes, African governments must develop detailed policies to groom students and professionals to be more patriotic and willing to work for their respective countries, regardless of low salaries and other benefits. This way, everyone will put the interest of their countrymen first and will not be easily attracted by foreign opportunities. Well, let's move on to another one, this time from Alex Kisonga of Sierra Leone, who writes, African leaders should assure the diaspora community that there will be political stability, good governance, reliable sources of power, and a crusade against corruption as inducement for them to come home and prosper as they're doing abroad. If these key issues are addressed, the diaspora community could easily return to help develop the continent. Definitely a very good first step to kind of seduce or entice immigrants to come back. Returning to the previous comment, though, I just want to emphasize again that many people who choose to stay don't do it because they are not patriotic. And if you've gotten a chance to live abroad or hang out within the diaspora communities, you'll actually notice that there are some of the most patriotic people you will ever find. Shaka.
Well, Irene?
Yes, there's something I've been itching to say, actually. In regards to our focus on government, right? I understand that the government plays a key role in all of this in formulating policy, but then there's also the issue of implementation, because there's a lot of policy that's sitting there and none of it's actually been implemented, because I was reading about some of these policies to try to get the diaspora back, but because it's not been implemented right,
mm-hmm.
it's not having the impact that they're expecting.
Because the government has to provide an infrastructure.
Exactly.
An enabling environment.
Yeah, exactly, which leads to the second point, right? That even if people are going to give increased salaries and the government's forced companies to give increased salaries or these opportunities, there's also the issue of having a basic infrastructure like water and electricity, the other pull factor that's going to bring people back. If we are not having, if we're having power cuts for 6 hours every day,
mm-hmm.
if we have, in some parts of Harare, we have not had water for, I can't even say the number of years,
mm-hmm.
but I think us as the diasporan community should be able to look and see that as an opportunity to also go and help, because this whole situation that we're in now with the brain drain, it's not just the government and the corporates, it's also our responsibility. And I think that's something we really need to remember, that they can provide the policy, but what are we doing? What opportunities are we actually identifying and saying, I want to go home and, you know, contribute to this? And no one says it's easy. Speaking for myself, it's not easy. There are so many times that you do feel like you want to give up.
But governments have to provide security, for example.
Yeah.
They have to respect fundamental human rights.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain fundamentals that, they have to, in a sense, to be willing to do, so that, frankly, when you talk about diaspora and foreign investors, you're talking about superstructure that fits in an infrastructure. Well, thanks, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, Shaka, I have to say, for some of us who live here, there are times, and it mostly happens when it's so cold in the United States, when it's snowing, it's minus 10 degrees. You basically have your scarf, your earmuffs, your hat, your gloves. Sometimes all you want to do is definitely pick up and go. And just because you have the beach, you have the warm climate in your mind. But once again, thanks to our brilliant panel of young African leaders. Thanks for inspiring us and so many others. Good luck to you all. And if you one day become presidents of your respective countries, please don't forget about us here. Maybe you'll give us an exclusive interview. Well, that's all for today's social media segment. Just a reminder that we appreciate all your feedback, whether it's on social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please, please keep them coming. And if you are a new fan, drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. Or you can simply join our YouTube channel. Subscribe to VOA TV to Africa. Now, let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, world leaders gather in New York City for the 69th United Nations General Assembly. African heads of state will be there to discuss some of their top concerns, and that includes terrorism and the fight against Ebola. Top diplomats and officials are also expected to work toward a plan to implement and transform the United Nations Millennium Development Goals beyond the 2015 deadline. That's next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, and welcome back. Today, we are bringing you another group of extraordinary Mandela Washington Fellows who are due to return home as their fellowship stint comes to an end. Our distinguished guests are Irene Chukwumbo, the co-founder and the current community manager of Hypercube Technology Hub, where she is responsible for developing capacity to help ignite a digital startup culture in Zimbabwe. Cyrus Kawalia, the founder and team leader of Vision Eye, an organization that offers workshops to young people who are interested in pursuing a career in cinema and photography. And last but not least, Laura Akomatsiri, a journalist from Togo. She is the former editor-in-chief of Focus Infos, a weekly newspaper based in Togo, and served as a local correspondent of the French desk of the South African Broadcasting Corporation, or SABC. Well, I have to say once again ladies and gentlemen, I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. You're most welcome. I gather that I do have a caller from South Sudan. Good evening, John. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Sally.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, and you there?
Usually terrific. What is your question, John?
My question is whether we should really redefine this concept of brain drain.
Uh-huh.
Because when I look at it, it presupposes that the best brain are actually going outside Africa, but I think in Africa we still have the best brain.
Mm-hmm.
And then secondly, of course, when you look at, you know, the movement of these people to let's say to Western countries, I assume that is a normal decision process.
I see.
So can we look at the biasness of that concept itself, the brain drain? Thank you.
Thank you so much. I suppose that is why there is also the flip side of it, which is brain gain. A reminder that you are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. To participate in our discussion, please call us at 202-619-3111. US country code is 1. We'll continue our discussion in a moment, so please don't go away.
Brain drain further reduces the already low quantity of professionals across the continent. It reduces the number of dynamic and innovative people, increases dependence on foreign technical assistance, slows the transfer of technology and widens the gap between Africa and industrialized nations, and reduces income tax revenues and contributions to the gross domestic product. On the positive side, there's a contribution of new skills when students and professionals return home. Remittances from skilled workers boost household welfare and support the balance of payments.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook, keywords Straight Talk Africa.
What concerned me was the number of Africans that are skilled and studied and know things that I have met here and have no intentions of going back on the continent. These are people whose skills would transform a lot of the problems we have. You know, if our leaders and governments, they don't wake up to this reality that you need to create an environment of the best talent to thrive on the continent, it will be very difficult for us to make progress. We need these people to come back. We need the best brains that are born on Africa to stay on the continent and make, you know, Africa what it should be.
Welcome back, and that was Martin Mugavi, Managing Director at Future Investments Group Limited, on how his hopes for some of his fellow 2014 Mandela Washington young African leaders and how they will impact their homeland upon their return. Martin was a guest on last week's program. Before the break, and of course, we're talking about the question from South Sudan, which I think in some way, shape, or form, Martin, in fact, has touched on it. What would you like to add, Silas?
Just to agree with Martin to begin with is that, first of all, look at all the 500 that came. Already 400 have gone back,
mm-hmm.
which entirely means that there's still a group of very skilled and brilliant people that are still on the continent or are still willing to go back to push. But I think this is mostly a personal choice. The people who are really committed to doing what they can do. Mm. But it would be also very nice if leadership took initiative to set up the space for these people to move forward.
Mm.
And I think that's a very, very important aspect, that leadership plays a huge role in creating opportunity for people who live within that country to flourish. For example, you realize that creativity works together with independent thinking. If you don't have independent thinking, there's no creativity. Without creativity, you can't solve most of the problems or the challenges that particular country is facing or the continent as a whole.
As a matter of fact, there is a saying that it is only those who are willing to fail greatly that succeed enormously. The risk factor. And you need an environment of sorts. What about some who talk about, they keep talking about or quoting a former great American president, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, talking about ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. People forget that this was a very rich man, a man who came from an incredibly wealthy family, a man who was also an excellent public servant, a man, as a matter of fact, who used his father's foundation, $100,000, and gave it to a Kenyan political activist called Tom Mboya to bring the airlift, which brought people among the late Kenyan Wangari Maathai, who eventually won a Nobel Peace Prize, brought people to get skills here so that they can go back to Kenya and contribute to developing a new nation. Is it as simple as that, really? Because a lot of you, too, are doing, in some way, shape, or form, a bit of that. You graduated from college. Instead of going to look for a job or trying to get a Mercedes-Benz sports car and what have you, I see that you are, in fact, helping other people that are less fortunate than you. What inspired you to do that?
First of all, I didn't feel very comfortable to say that I want to leave my country and go elsewhere and forget about what I want to do. And I feel in commitment to helping people, there's quite a greater, I don't know how you'd say it, a greater feel, or I feel that there's something more to that. And most of us here are good experiences of people who have actually stayed back on the continent and have pushed extremely hard. And look at it this way. I would not be seated here today if I had not been really committed to my cause back at home. I'd have probably ended up somewhere maybe in Europe or America or North America doing some other job, but I stayed behind and I've remained committed to my cause. And now here I am today seated with you on this show. So I feel that it's a personal thing. There are people who are really just committed to making that change. But it gets better if the environment is actually, you know, able to fuel that. Then we'd probably have so many more different people contributing to a better Africa or a better Uganda, for example, where I come from.
Just in the case there were people, for example, in Katwe, part of the Ugandan capital, Kampala, in Soweto, part of South Africa, in Mathare, and all these other slum areas and stuff like that, people listening to you on radio or watching you on television, what kind of message do you have for those types of young people especially who may want to walk in your footsteps and be like you and sit in this particular chair in Studio 52, for example, in Washington, D.C., and share your experiences?
To begin with, there's got to be greater perseverance and persistence. And another thing that I feel now is very important for us coming from Africa is that in whatever you do, you must have a component of how you can help other people. And I think that is what has made me get here. For example, I had this project called the Youth Innovation Hub. The idea was to go to places like Katwe, Kisenyi, and document these very innovative people who, besides extreme conditions, were very innovative. Katwe and Kisenyi are literally slums, but people in this area are very innovative. They're doing what they can do with the little they have. For example, they do the bags for the border boarders that we ride back at home, which are very many, get worn out constantly, and they can sew these bags and then make money out of it. So you realize that doing that and focusing on that and creating an opportunity for those people, in turn, I also created an opportunity for myself because they found what I was doing to be very interesting. So people need to learn to persevere and they need to learn to insist on what they're doing and have some commitment to their community.
What about you, Laura?
Yes, I think as Cyrus just said, we have to be committed enough to bring change in our community. Because when you you just work for yourself, you know. You cannot move forward. You have to have behind you the whole community that can push you forward, you know. So talking about, we had a person who called before and was saying that it's a slavery of, you know, education slavery. It's not that. You know, we are talking today about globalization. I don't have anything against the fact that people are going abroad to get education or good education, because when you take the area of engineering, you know, there is no curricula in Africa that address that domain. So we have to go abroad. Like, as part of this fellowship, we are coming to the US and we were split into some different university to gain insight, to gain new skills. But we have to put into practice what you have learned.
I hear you. Exactly. I hear you. I gather that we do have a caller from Uganda. Good evening, Kalisa. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you, Shaka. This is Engineer Kalisa from Uganda.
You're most welcome, Mr. Engineer Kalisa.
Thank you very much. I've been following your discussion on the brain drain of Africa.
Mm-hmm. So what is your question or observation, sir?
The observation is that even when our people go abroad in search of greener pastures, what we have realized on ground is that when they reach there, even if they are professionals, they are not given opportunity to do the professional jobs. And once they stay there for a long time, at the end of the day, they come back when they cannot even do things which are related to their profession. Because we have doctors, we have engineers who are out there, but the only thing they do is to go to factories, lift boxes, do manual handling work, and they are not involved in the real technical work. So they are coming back sometimes, does not help this country. However, what I encourage all African countries is to involve its people in the groundwork. Like in Uganda here, we have the Institution of Professional Engineers and Engineers Registration Board. They are working hard to do what they call skilling Uganda. We are training people to ensure that they can do work from here. We get concepts from Africa. Like you are talking about Katwe and the other areas in Kisenyi, we are mobilizing those technicians down there such that we can train them, they gain skills, and they are able to do work which is professional.
Well, thank you so much. Unfortunately, Engineer Kalisa, time is not our best ally. Next time. Well, on that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Irene Chikumbo, co-founder and community manager of Hypercube Technology Hub in Zimbabwe, Cyrus Kawalia, founder and team leader of Vision Eye based in Uganda, and last but not least, Lola Akomatsiri, former editor-in-chief of Focus Infos, a weekly newspaper based in Togo. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning is Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.